Carla Falava, and welcome to the Global Bus Figure Success Podcast. I'm Andrew Fa'avali, your host. Every week I'll be chatting with successful Pacific people from across the globe, unpacking their stories and, more importantly, picking out insights, lessons and golden nuggets you can use to live your best life too. Kia rana, family and friends, and welcome back to the Global Bus Figure Success Podcast. Thank you for joining us here, and I hope your week is going well. It feels like in most parts of the world, the COVID-19 restrictions are being lessened. So I hope you enjoyed more time and space with your family and your friends. Last week, we had Apollo, the Terminator Perolini, on the show, former rugby and league star, now businessman based in Dubai. Go back and have a listen to that one if you haven't already, especially if you're in a professional sports pathway or you or your kids are contemplating one. What I really like about Apollo's story is that he shows that the courage he had to muster up when making big hits or running it straight on the field against huge, massive opponents, that courage and that bravery could and should be taken off the field as well, and that athletes should be able to run it straight in boardrooms, classrooms, and in business or whatever fields they choose after sport. So he was a planner, he was meticulous in his preparation, as most professional athletes are. And that's what held him in good stead across different seasons of his life. Speaking about professional athletes too, I just find it interesting. We released this podcast when the pandemic hit, so there has been no new sport and no new news really. But what I'm really enjoying is the Last Dance documentary, which is about Michael Jordan and the Bulls, currently out on Netflix. My wife and I have really been enjoying it, and I just think it's pertinent because it's about success. And is there a more successful athlete than Michael Jordan? He's definitely up there as one of the best. Something I really find fascinating is how competitive Jordan is. I think we all have heard the story about how he got cut in high school, and that spurred him on and motivated him to make it to the top. He never wanted to feel that rejection again. But I also am really interested and drawn in by how he actually extracts the best out of the players around him. He's actually copying some flack for coming across as a bit of a bully or a tyrant to his teammates because he trash talks them and he berates them often. But in Jordan's mind, I think he says he was preparing them for that time in the finals when the pressure was going to come on, and he wanted to see how they'd react to that. So for some, he's come off as a harsh and arrogant dude, but I'm thinking that the proof is in the pudding, you know. No one can deny his success. And a question that popped up in the last episode actually was, do you want to be liked or do you want to be respected? Do you want to be liked or do you want to be respected? And I think it's an interesting question to think about, especially in terms of living a successful and fulfilled life. So look out for that one if you have Netflix, or if you don't, maybe you'd have to do what they do in the islands and watch from outside your neighbor's house and hope they have subtitles on it. Okay, so on to this show. We've got our first Cook Island guest. We have a dude I've known since I started high school, actually, Wayne Henry of Wayne Henry Mortgages. In fact, I actually met Wayne on the school bus, and he stuck out because he was really, really fair-skinned, but dead set. He had the humour and mannerisms of an islander. And so I was drawn to this guy, and he was always full of jokes. So it is a bit buzzy, I guess, to be chatting to an old school mate like this in a really formal setting. But I'm doing it because I've had the pleasure of watching Wayne do his thing and grow and become successful in what he set out to do. So Wayne was brought up down the road from me in Manurewa, South Auckland. He's of Cook Island and Bailangi heritage. During our school days, he was a supermarket trolley boy after school, and he was really, really talented at heaps of things, especially sport like rugby, cricket, touch, basketball, etc. But at school, Wayne was probably best known as a dude who could make you laugh, who was always happy and really enjoyed being the class jokester. Not too dissimilar to Johnny Tapu, the owner of Cover Bowl Media, who was in the first episode. Actually, we were all good mates at school. After school, Wayne decided not to go on to further education, but he went straight into a production line making mountain bikes. So he hit the factory floor, got sick of that, had a quick stint to Australia, and then returned to New Zealand and landed a job in the National Bank. Similar again to Johnny Tapu in that he was on the phones as a customer services rep. From there, Wayne worked, joked, and hustled his way up to managing branches and eventually became a mortgage broker, which set off a path for him to leading and owning his own mortgage company. So let's get into the interview. I know you'll enjoy it. Wayne Henry, kia rana, my man.
Yeah, kia rana, mate.
How's it going?
Yeah, good, man. Well, I mean, COVID-19's hit, man. It's, pretty crazy times at the moment, especially in my industry, but you're feeling good.
So can you just tell us about Wayne Henry Mortgages and the industry at the moment, given COVID's closed everything down?
Yeah. So there'd be a lot of families doing it fairly tough out there. I suppose there's a real feeling of anxiousness globally, really. In my industry, you know, finance is probably one of your biggest outputs. It's your biggest financial decision you'll make in your life. So the fear of maybe dropping one income or maybe dropping two incomes or the fear of the unknown, it's really going to strike the heart of a lot of people, a lot of families as well. So my job at the moment's predominantly been helping everyone sail through those choppy waters. Well, not even choppy waters, man, they're tidal waves. So just helping people just get through that as smoothly as we possibly can. So my whole life at the moment, is based, it's really the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff at the moment. And hopefully it doesn't get any worse, but I've been through the GFC before as a banker. My heart tells me it's probably going to get a little bit worse before it gets better.
All right. And so you're acting as coach, advisor, mentor, as well as dealing with people's finances. Obviously, this is emotional time. How's that been for you? It's a bit broader than just mortgage advice right now.
Yeah, it is a bit broader, man. You can become a counsellor kind of overnight. For me and Kaz, it was really important that we got ourselves mentally prepared for the next few months. So we've had to change up our pretty busy lifestyles. You know, I'm used to getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, jumping in traffic in Auckland, heading into the office in the city, starting my day about 6 o'clock. So we've had to really transition into something a lot different. So my day starts really early as well, but we jump in on our bikes. We probably cycle anywhere between 30 and 60 Ks a day at the moment, just to get the mind and your blood flowing, get the mind starting to sharpen up a little bit and just release a lot of that anxiety and tension before we start our day now. For us, it's been a pretty cool journey. So got to be pretty sharp mentally for our clients to, you know, to help them through these next few months.
Okay, so self-care, physical, mental.
Yeah, definitely, man. You know, pre-COVID-19, my lifestyle probably wasn't as healthy as it should be. In my industry, my line of work, it can be really taxing emotionally. People see mortgage advisors in the flash cars and the flash houses, and they think life's a pretty sweet sort of it's pretty sweet little lifestyle, but there's a hell of a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of work involved in the mental capacity you need to operate, even in a small business, needs to be pretty high.
Mortgage advisors, obviously, there's the perception that if you're advising on mortgages, you've got the mortgages yourself, you've got your wealth creation and your income stream sorted. But let's go back to the roots, man, because we both grew up in Manurewa in South Auckland. We used to catch the bus together all the way into town to go to school. Tell us about your upbringing as a young Cook Island kid in Manurewa, South Auckland.
Yeah, my upbringing was pretty tough, man. Was pretty strict. My father was a very, very strict individual. So I think we were pretty much, we're borderline sort of Clendon, weren't we, Weymouth? We were John Walker Drive. So we were kind of the deeper part of Manurewa at that stage. It wasn't all picket fences and roses in our area, but a really cool area. Had a really pretty my upbringing sort of prepared me for life. Certainly didn't prepare me for grammar, man, that was for sure. But it certainly prepares you for, you know, future struggles or future adversities that you're going to need to overcome. So yeah, just like every kid, man, we spend a lot of our time outside playing 20 on 20 touch on the street. There's a local creek we used to always congregate down in John Walker Drive. Had a really, really good bunch of childhood friends when I was a kid, which I don't see that anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, that just the grind, as a young kid, just trying to deal with everything that's thrown at you from such a young age. I thought that environment absolutely prepared me for what was to come, man. That was for sure.
You're a positive guy. You're an upbeat, happy dude. You know, Manurewa can sometimes be branded as a low socioeconomic and then therefore poor, depressing, unhappy place. But I didn't really have that experience because I know that inside, you know, my family, we didn't really have that mindset or story. We knew that things sometimes were tough, but we didn't ever think that we were down and out. Dad worked at the steel mill for 30 years, then jumped straight in taxis. Mum drove buses and worked at the cash checkout. What was it like for you? Because you're a positive, happy guy.
Yeah, man. Well, I come from a beautiful family. You know, my mum's family's I don't really see a hell of a lot of my mum's. That's my Pākehā side, my European side. My mum, born and raised in Waiea, then moved to Papakura. But for me, I spend most of my childhood with my Cook Island family, and the Cook Island culture is pretty warm, man. It's a pretty warm, upbeat, friendly, encouraging, a family-orientated culture. So just like you, man, mum and dad were... I mean, I only think Dad ever worked for someone once. I think it was Ulrich Aluminium in Otahu, Main Street, Otahu. Yeah. But he's always had his own business, whether it was a lawnmowing business or, you know, he had his property services business. He was a real estate agent. All those key elements sort of tend to raise, or you tend to look at those, you know, when you're a kid. Mum and Dad were always worked. They had pretty strong work ethics. I hated home life, man. My home life was actually, it was quite horrific, but where I engaged in the positive side of growing up was school. So when I was getting ready to go to school, whether I was running to school or jumping on a bus to go to school, school was my release. It was my output. So it was my comfort zone. So whenever I walked, most kids would be walking through the school gates, probably not really prepared for the day or like, oh, don't really want to be here. But for me, man, that was my element. Like, I was, you know, preparing to go and hang out with some friends in a positive environment, in an environment where I knew I was going to thrive. And that's where my personality, I think, started to build. Just interacting with people, networking. I would, without knowing it, man, I started networking from about 6 years old. So, you know, and you don't lose those moments or those memories. And that really, school really prepared me for life outside of school, and just for always the positive nature that I did had, because I wasn't at home. Home was not a happy place for me.
Do you mind just unpacking that about your home life, or is that a bit close
to
home?
It's probably the Pacific culture at the time. It was tough love. I mean, I won't, you know, alleviate the details, but yeah, it was just not an environment where I thought I was, you know, where I was ever gonna strive mentally. You know, I strive physically because you know, we were taught pretty tough love, but not being in that environment, man, is where I really, really strived.
Do you think tough love is love?
I don't know, man. It taught me a few things growing up. People watching this podcast probably looking at a white guy going, nah, no, no chance. But yeah, man, it was pretty heavy. I think being of lighter color too, you do get judged. I used to hang out with all the poly boys as a kid growing up. I still do. And it is a question that I probably can't answer. It's probably more the generations before me that probably are the best to answer that question. For me, don't know, bro. You doubt those cards, you just play them as best you can, right?
That's right. Well, some of us do, and some of us take longer to get through it, process it, and then make sense of it for the next part of their lives. Yeah, thanks for being honest, man. And so what was it like being that fair-skinned half-caste dude? Because, yeah, you were hanging out with me, man.
I remember we were raised in an environment where skin colour didn't mean anything. We were surrounded by all sorts. I think back in our era, we still had white people on our street. Still had Europeans, still had Asians, a couple of Indians in there, but the majority, I think, were Pacific Island Māori. So I kind of thrived in that environment because I didn't know what colour was at that stage. You're just in your own little bubble in South Auckland thinking that's how the rest of the world operated, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't until, you know, you do get the privilege to go to a school at Auckland Grammar and you walk through those big arcing concrete arches and you walk in the school and you're like, oh, my God. This is a little bit different to what I'm used to. So back in those days growing up, wasn't a huge deal.
Yeah, so just for context, for those outside of Auckland Grammar is still a state school, but it's a very old traditional school. And for us living in Manurewa, it was about a 40-minute bus ride with other kids who were sent into town to go to school. And then, yeah. The architecture was just a big trip. They were massive as basalt rocks and stuff. It was right under a volcano, Mount Eden. And so there were all the. It just looked so different to what our homes, our weatherboard homes, usually would look like.
Yeah. I had to get two buses, and if we didn't have money for the bus, man, I was beating feet in the morning. From Weymouth up to Southmore, Manurewa.
Yeah, no, I remember my brother was chasing you around the bus because he wanted to beat you up because you used this car and it got confiscated.
Yeah, sorry about that, Glenn.
So tell us about school then. If you found school as a safe haven, and I reckon that's a really poignant point at this time, because during the COVID lockdowns, some people were saying close the schools, and other people were saying, hold on, schools are a safe haven for some vulnerable kids. So that kind of paints a picture that that point was actually real. Kids going to school find that a place of refuge. So at school then, were you academically thriving? Were you thriving in sport? Were you thriving at them all? What was going on there?
Academically, probably not. I didn't have a chance to learn how you learn from day one at Grammar. Remember, man, our first 2 days at school, you were straight into exams, and then they class you. They stream you from the most intelligent to the other guys. And, academically, I thought going in that I was just an average student, because that's just how you're schooled out in South Auckland. There's no real class level at that stage. Like you're not identified at primary school and intermediate. So that was a real shock for me, man. I mean, that first 2 days, and then you get streamed and put into classes, and then you're at one of the lower classes when you first start. It's quite a humbling experience when you're sitting there and, you know, three quarters of the school's already been called into their classes, and you're still hanging out. So that was a little bit brutal, but you got to deal with that.
Can we just stop sports there and wise, just have a look at that? Because so at Auckland Grammar, you went from, back then it was called third form, so you were putting three A, B, C, D, and for us, I think it went all the way down to J or K. And then, unfortunately, the reality is that it was only based on one metric, and that was Western intelligence. And therefore, Pacific students were mostly down in the H to K, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, maths and English were the two subjects, I think, from memory, where your exams are based solely around. So, I hadn't sat an exam before, so that was new. And I found out pretty quickly that I wasn't actually that good at maths or English, but I'll probably alleviate a bit later on. But grammar allows you to grow within those particular classes, and they do allow you to move up and down, which I really, really, really enjoyed. But a pretty big wake-up call, man.
I'll be up front, man. So I was blessed enough to be, you know, near the top streams based on this one metric. But when we first got put into classes, I remember they said 3A, 3B. I was in 3B. And then we went by last name, so they went Fa'avale, and then it was Filial. Now, Filial was this Balangi dude, and he came and sat next to me, but another New Wayan dude came and sat next to me too. And his name, I'll just say it's Folau. He came, he thought it was his name, and he came with a message. And he came and sat next to me. And I went, oh, man, there's one of the brothers. And then when he heard his name on the other side of the list, he was like, was that me? And then he got up and ran down to the back of the hall. I just thought that was brutal, like you said. But what does that do to your mind? You know, CBT or cognitive behavior theory says how you think.
Oh, it's brutal, man. That was a long bus ride home, man. You know, you're kind of contemplating your intelligence as a 13-year-old. Like, but I think what people with the viewers need to realize is that most of the kids that get to grammar have been through a very similar criteria or curriculum. So they kind of know where they are by the time they get to grammar. But for us, man, that was a shock. It was deflating. I felt a little bit humiliated. I felt very unintelligent, almost dumb. I felt dumb. So, man, that was a tough period of my life, actually, as a 13-year-old.
How does that manifest then when you're thinking like that? You're thinking, oh, man, I'm down in this class, say J or I.
Well, that's the beauty with Auckland Grammar. They don't let you manifest. It's like, hey, man, it is what it is. That's the class you're in. We're going to teach you. Here's your curriculum. This is what you need to do to get into the next, to go up a level or go up to the next class. So you don't have any time to think, man. You don't have time to feel sorry for yourself. Like day three, you're at school. There's no honeymoon period. Like you're at school with 2,500 students coming from an intermediate where we had like 300-400.
So some people couldn't handle that. How did you become resilient to it? Because some people
that was my comfort zone, man. I love school. Being around people, being in an environment where I really enjoyed myself. For me, it was not a hell of a lot I could do about it, man, but just concentrate. And I think I got over it pretty quickly, because obviously in the lower classes, you get to meet all your all the kids that are probably coming from other different areas of Auckland. They're probably going through exactly the same thoughts process that I was. So I built some pretty good friendships early on with a lot of those boys and stayed pretty close with a lot of those guys for the remainder of school, actually. But yeah, remember, man, I really enjoyed being at school, being surrounded by my peers, being the funny guy, cracking the jokes, just being appreciated for who I was at that time.
So jokes, man. So tell us about humor, because, you know, a lot of our in our communities, we love telling jokes.
Yeah.
How did that play a part in your journey?
Yeah, well, being the white boy in the family, man, you gotta be fast. Like, you know, my older cousins who I grew up with were just, you know, they were assassins, wordsmiths. You had to learn pretty quick, man. Your comebacks had to be pretty sharp. So I think just through Cook Island culture, similar to Samoan culture, man, you know, when you get together, there's 100 plus, everyone's talking. Like, there's not a moment silence when you get to those particular gatherings. So you kind of build your skill. You're building your skill level through word when you're gathering with your families. And you don't even know it. So family gatherings were just about every weekend. So you're actually being introduced to different forms of language, different forms of communication from a young age, which you only reflect on now when you look back. You were actually in training when you were sitting there next to all your cousins and all your aunties and uncles eating raw fish, mayonnaise and chop suey.
Just wish they taught you better freestyles, because I always used to waste you at freestyling.
I was only honing my skills back in those days.
All right, so, man, you left school and you went into banking.
Well, I didn't go into banking, man. I left school and I actually went into work for a company called Shepherd Industries, and they are made Avanti cycles.
Yeah, that's right.
So I started on the production line putting bikes together in a warehouse where there'd have been like three big buzzers for your morning tea, lunch and afternoon tea. So I was in a factory environment straight away. And that was cool for the first kind of 6 to 12 months. But I started getting a little bit sick and tired of being in a cold warehouse on the line with people that have been there for 10, 15, sometimes 20 years. And that's the first thing I kind of did out of school, really enjoyed that job and just worked my way straight up, went straight into the office, customer service, didn't really take me too long. Yeah. And then just started managing one of the departments, and it didn't take very long. That might've been over a sort of a 3 to 4 year period.
So how long were you there overall? And then where did you move to?
I think about 3 or 4 years. Then like all Kiwis, man, I shot off to Aussie, thought I was going to be the next Benji Marshall, and I was back pretty quick. Yeah, I was back really quick, actually. And when I got back home, back to New Zealand, you know, the old man was pretty hard on me. You know, it was literally get a job or I'll give you some jobs. So the first morning I woke back up in New Zealand, I went to the fridge and there was about 10 to 15 jobs. We're weeding the garden, just all those mundane, boring jobs that no kid wants to do any of that stuff. So I had 2 hours a day to go out and look for a job. I had to get my CV together, and then I'd be back and working again in the afternoon. So I thought, man, I'd rather be working for someone and making money. I don't really care where I worked. And the opportunity came up at the contact center at the National Bank. And that's where it started, man. That's where my banking career started.
So, yeah, I remember you selling all your stuff, getting ready to come here to Brisbane to be the next Alfie Langer.
And then you
came back. How come you came back?
Well, because obviously I didn't – financially I wasn't going to be supported by any league clubs because I was obviously just going there to try my hand. So my relatives in Brisbane, Castledine, they'd probably been there for about 10, 15 years, and the family had always gone to stay with a couple of my family members. You know, back then in Brisbane, man, you could be working at Arnott's getting paid $25 an hour. This is going back 20 years ago. That was kind of going to be it for me. I was job hunting, but I didn't really want to do the factory work. I was like, nah, man, I've got more to offer than that. And so I just thought, man, I don't really want to. There's no disrespect to my family or anyone that's you know, helped raise me. That wasn't me. I knew there were better things on the horizon. I knew my intelligence at that stage was sharp, and it was sharp on a social level. You know, it didn't mean I could do maths exams or sit the bar. I knew socially that I was a lot faster and a lot of depth than people my age at the time. So I always knew that there was going to be something better. So that's why I came back to New Zealand. The banking job just was one of the jobs that came up. I literally was in the interview for about 20 minutes. And I remember the lady saying to me, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I was like, your boss. And then on the way home, man, they rung me and they offered me the job.
And it's funny because you know that we interviewed Johnny Tapu, who's one of our boys,
and you
guys got a similar story.
Bro, a very similar story, man. He was at Sky Customer Services when I was at the bank Customer Services.
And were you guys in the same class at Auckland Grammar?
I think we're in the same class, a few classes together, yeah. And definitely the same stream. Honestly, man, that was the worst guy to be in class with because you got nothing done.
Yeah, but you guys were telling jokes together. I was.
Oh, man, we were boys.
We were mocking each other.
If you looked at me and Johnny at school, you would have been going, oh, man. I mean, those guys, they're just not going to make it. They're going to be working in a factory for 20, 25, 30 years.
Because he said something similar, right? When he got his shot in the interview that was what people would think was beyond him, the guy asked him, why should I give you the job? And he said to the guy, because if I was in the Titanic, I would have spotted the iceberg. And now your interviewer is saying to you, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And you say, your boss. Bro, yeah, that's audacious. What gave you the audacity to say that?
Oh, man, I was always pretty confident, kid. I've always been pretty confident with my skill set, my ability. And at that stage, man, I just wanted to make an impression because there's no way I was going to go back to weeding gardens, man. So I needed that job. Yeah, it was just off the cuff, man. And actually, I formed a pretty good friendship with that lady after that. So, yeah, it was all good.
Because you and Johnny got funny lines, but one of your funniest lines ever to me has been, I'm the greatest athlete that never made it.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. I was just too talented at too many things, man. I should have just specialized.
What would you have specialized in?
I don't know. Rowing?
Or as the Cox?
Yeah, the Cox.
What about sport, man? You grew up playing sport. You came to grammar, played rugby, then you went into playing rep rugby at counties.
Played played all through school, man. Again, you know, I went into grammar thinking big things. I was gonna be the next whatever, but again, you know, that the reality hit pretty hard, and I didn't. But I think I blossomed probably outside of school more when I started playing club rugby for Ardmore out in counties, just because a cousin of mine was playing. Yeah, and I just blossomed and went all through the grades and had a little bit of success through with the rep side with counties as well, which was cool. But I mean, at school, I was playing rugby and league. I was playing league for Mount Wellington as well. Man, I loved everything about rugby, man. The bus trip there, or getting picked up by the parents, getting together, talking about what you did on the Friday night, getting in the changing room, the smells, everything about rugby, man, was just joy flowed through my body. And I didn't care who we were playing. And that's similar to what I do now as a living. The feeling of being in the changing room, being around, you know, your brothers, going out to war, that's how I feel in my role now as a business owner. That's what I love doing every day, man, getting into the office, solving problems, helping clients out. So very, very similar.
So there's transferable values and transferable skills. I just want to dig a bit deeper on this humour and fun aspect, because ultimately in the first 15, they were pretty straight. Do you think that coaches misinterpret having fun for not being serious?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you look at our game at the moment, man, it's so structured. I mean, the flair is gone. And if you can get into a structure early as a kid and you display some certain skill levels or talent, you're going to go a long way. And that's what's difficult for Polly and Māori boys, because we were brought up playing 20 on 20 touch. Like, we'd kick around the rubbish bin and then chip over the tree. Like, those were aspects of what we did as kids that transferred onto the rugby and the league field. And that stuff has disappeared now. But there's Yeah, grandma was pretty strict, man. You know how strict grandma was. I think if you were kind of outside the box, or your characteristics were a little bit different to what they were used to, I think that weighed against you. But in saying that, man, like, there were some talented people at grandma. It was very difficult to get into some of those things.
But it was a reflection, I think, of the metrics that they used. So the 3A to 3K thing is one metric. It's just on what you do in your exams, or how you achieve in your exams. And for us, I remember going to grammar and they told us to do division, you know, it was like 9 over 27 or whatever, right? But I had never done division like that. I had done long division. And then I was like, bamboozled, but that didn't mean that I was dumb. It just meant I had not been taught in that way. And then for them to stream us, because maybe we hadn't done it that way because we went to intermediate in Manurewa, you know, maybe that's an unfair assessment. What I'm saying about the rugby is that if you have a look at people like yourself and Josh Levy and those kinds of guys who maybe didn't make the first 15, but when they left school, they kicked on and they did really well. I reckon it could be around the coach's assessment, not necessarily your talent. and that the reps assessed differently and weren't so stringent and narrow and structured, that they allowed you to be who you are and play how you play, and that's why you kicked on.
Yeah, well, there's only one. I remember one coach, Grandma Richard Skelly. He was the only guy that basically just said, "Hey, man, this is you. This is your team. This is your back line. Just do whatever you need to do." And that was probably the most enjoyable year at Grandma. I think it was 3A. I think that was the year. So that was my most memorable year. And Mr. Skelly just coached me differently. And it made him so that little very simple adjustment to his coaching style just sent me off and I blossomed.
And I think that's a testament to learning and teaching, because Mr. Skelly is now at the New Zealand Rugby Union coaching coaches. And it kind of shows that his approach is now the approach that's been adapted and adopted. And that's the one that will help us thrive, especially. And then you look at the Pacific representation in the Super Sides and the All Blacks. It's just clear that if you allow them to be who they are and express themselves, you'll get the best out of them.
Yeah.
And then totally. I think that, you know, the fact that we were down heavily represented in the lower classes could be a representation of us, but I think it points more to the representation of how we assess. Okay, let's push into your banking industry, because I want to get to the company, man, like Wayne Henry Mortgages. Yeah. I think personal branding and having your own business is amazing. Just paint us a picture around the banking industry and what that was like for you.
Again, it's very similar to Grandma, man. You've got your higher class and your middle class, and you got your lower class. So one thing you learn as a South Auckland kid, man, growing up, or once you learn what the transferable skills into banking is just be yourself, know your scenario, know your situation, developing relationships. I developed, like, same with JT, man. I developed relationships with the guys at the top. And yeah, I was still a funny guy, but they understood that there was true value there. Like, this kid's, like, he's talking to quite a few clients, bringing us in a lot of business. And it didn't take very long, man, before I climbed that corporate ladder. And I got to branch manager pretty early on. I kind of realized that maybe wasn't really the role for me, having to rely on a whole lot of personalities in order to meet my targets. So I needed to be in a more singular role, like a mobile mortgage manager. And that's what I did. I got handpicked to start going out and selling mortgages with the bank, and I thrived in that role. So that was just a natural progression for me, going from a mobile mortgage manager to a mortgage advisor. It was actually a broker back when I did make the change.
So you've obviously sold a lot. What's the secret to success with selling?
Oh, man. The secret is just be yourself, man. Be personable. People see through the bullshit. It's very easy. You know, you can be doing it and not even realize. So people love to deal with someone that they feel that people that are impressionable, have a smile, have a friendly demeanor. And that can be not only in a physical form, man. What I got really good at as a kid is understanding mannerisms. And I could pick up a client's mannerisms even through a phone call within the first 1 to 2 minutes. And I always knew that was a skill. So a really good judge of character. And again, and the only reason I got so good at that is because I'd been surrounded by cultures. I've been surrounded by different races, different people, different temperaments. I got to see how the wealthy lived at Grandma when we were there. One of my really good mates as a kid at Grandma was Didier Rodriguez. So his dad was one of the heads at Fletcher Building when he was over here. Like, he lived in Remy where they had a butler, like, he had a driver, they had a cook. Like, that just blew me away, man. So that, yeah, as I say, the transition or the skill set that I learned through the years as a kid, you only realize that when you get to when you get a little bit older.
Well, we have butlers, drivers and cooks. They're just under 16 and they just called your kids.
Yeah, that's true. Man, I didn't have one of those.
You were then.
That's right, yeah.
All right, so selling, then you went into mortgage advising. What happened after that? How long were you in this banking industry before you decided to jump out?
I've been banking about 14 years, 14, 15 years. And then I, as a mobile manager, our targets kept getting increased. So year on year. So whenever our targets got increased, it meant that obviously we were going to earn a little bit less. That defeated the whole commission environment at that stage. So I got an opportunity with a really good mate of mine I used to work with, Joel. Him and another really good mate of mine, Amon, had started Super City Mortgages, and it was kind of an invite-only group of people. Awesome team, man. So I got introduced into the advisor industry through good friends of mine, where I learnt my trade and, again, got really good at what I was doing as well. So I was there for about 4 years. And then my wife's, she's risk-averse. And I'm like, man, we need to, like, I want to do my own thing. I want to start my own business. You need to trust me. And at the time, the time I left the bank to the time I went out to a broker, I think people need to understand, like, we were, you know, we had a fairly sizable mortgage. We just moved over to the North Shore. Our daughter was, my stepdaughter, she was going to Dio, which was a private school. So we had some pretty big overheads. We had big expenses. So my wife was like, no. You can't go from a well-paid salary job to 100% commission only. It's just not going to happen.
So can I just jump in there and just ask you about the so what was your salary journey like from customer services up to this job that you're talking about?
Yeah. So customer service, I think I started on about 37.5 grand talking on phones, and then got up to, I think as a mobile manager, man, I was earning anywhere from sort of 150 to maybe about 180 on a good year. And to go from that and just cut that off at the neck and then go into a role that not only do we need to get accredited, so there's about a month or maybe a 2 month lag of no salary. So your six figure salary is not coming in anymore, and you're learning the ropes in the new role, and it's 100% commission only. You're paid on the success of the loan you write with a client.
So there's two sides to that. That's really freaky, but also that also means that you've backed yourself in terms of selling.
Well, here's the thing. Because I was enjoying myself so much in the first 3 months, my wife decided, I'm going to quit my job. So we went from, so within 3 months, man, we went from two fairly decent salaries, living a fairly comfortable lifestyle, to 100% on Wayne Henry's shoulders. So, there was a bit of pressure there. But again, man, I didn't see it like that. I saw it as an opportunity, and I knew that it was going to pay off. You have to have, anyone listening to this, man, if you want to do something like that and you want to start a business, you don't go in half-assed. You can't doubt yourself. Because I think back now and I'm like, man, what was I thinking? But you don't know that at the time because you're so focused on the next journey. So it's important that if you do take that next step, and however big that step may look, man, you just back yourself and just do it. No, don't look back. And that's exactly what I did. And for me, man, it turned out.
So what's the secret sauce to not doubting? Because everyone has self-doubt. And I know that self-doubt is holding a lot of people from fulfilling their potential and taking that big move, which seems big. But when you've done it and you look back, it's just another step in the journey.
Yeah, it was a little bit easier for me to transition because, remember, I was going to do exactly what I was doing, but for myself. It was my own business because I contracted Super City at that stage. I'd formed Wayne Henry Mortgages in 2015, but I was contracting. I've been Wayne Henry Mortgages now out on our own for about just under 2 years. So I've been doing this for over 7 years now as a business owner. But you have to fight that battle with yourself. That's a mental battle that no one's going to be able to give you any advice, man. You will know that when you wake up one morning and then your inner self goes, I'm doing it. And at that moment, if there's hesitation after that moment, then you're in all sorts of trouble.
That's mean.
All sorts of trouble.
So what's the turnover for Wayne Henry Mortgages now? You went from 35K, you smashed it up to 150 to 80, 180.
Yeah, we do pretty well, man. I mean, I won't get into too much detail with numbers, but we're well in excess of, 400 plus K per year on a commission basis. My wife now works for the company. She works full time. I'm trying to transition another couple of brokers on board too, which does take time, but I think the long-term benefits for our company is going to be really, really good. It's a family-orientated business too. So, yeah, I mean, if people want to be in an environment where they can achieve and, go further than they've ever dreamed, it's definitely an industry for people who want to take a punt, who have confidence, and are just genuinely good with people, man. We're pretty ambitious.
COVID-19's
going to take a... It's going to mean that we're going to probably have to just chill for the next couple of years. But first and foremost, my first goal was if we ever hit another recession or a GFC, certainly another COVID-19, that I didn't want to have to go back and work for someone. I wanted to be able to just continue with my business and work in it. And we're going to be able to do that. Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Man, that's just way too big to comprehend for many of us. 400K as a dude who was in the lower rungs of the Auckland Grammar Metric, and then coming out, working in the factory, giving Brisbane a go for sport, come back, tail between the legs, jump in to a new sector, customer services, where you said to the lady who was interviewing you, you're going to be her boss. Stayed there for a couple of decades. Was it 20 years?
No, the bank was about 14, 15 years.
14, 15
about
years.
About 14, yeah.
But you're enjoying a really good salary. You've got, you know, your daughter in private school. You've got mortgages to your ears. And then you jump out and do your own business. Did you ever think that it might not work?
Nah, never. No, never did. Yeah, never entered. I wanted to do it earlier. But, you know, when you get married, when you're in a relationship, so your wife has got the final say, bro. So it was always, Kaz, I do remember the day when I did it. I mean, I remember I was driving. A target just got put up again, and I rang her, and I was with a good mate of mine. And I rang Kaz, I said, man, I'm out. I'm done. And she went, yep. And then I was, what the f-? So, you know, she just, that was it. That was bomb. Yep. So she knew it was the right time as well. So, man, this is, if you get anything out of this, this is a partnership. This isn't just Wayne Henry, man. This is Wayne and Karen Henry. She's a rock star. So I'm very lucky to have her on board. I mean, she was a pretty successful banker in her own right, but she's just taken this role to pieces.
Let's pay homage to the wives too, because, you know, obviously the people that we've, some of the people that we've podcasted, John has Barbara, and Barbara is very different. Her strengths actually edify that union. Mm. You've got Karen, who's risk averse, who let you jump out, but also whose strengths help you, because you can make money, but I kind of feel like the women help you keep the money and build the money.
Bro, you know, 100%. Yeah, man, I'm out the front. I'm shop front. Kazzy's in the back, man, with calculator, you know, just tapping away. She's dotting I's cross. In my industry, very difficult to run 500 plus clients without a support mechanism or without a support team. It's just impossible. And just one thing, just so I can be clear, it was never about the money for me. It was never about getting to those heights. It was about the enjoyment, creating a brand, being happy, you know, having my own business, challenging myself, even going from a Wayne Henry Mortgages as a contractor to Wayne Henry Mortgages as a business. That's a wide gap, man. That's a huge gap. There's a lot that goes on within those within that particular space, as Johnny would have found out too over the last year or so.
So Pacific people are collective people. We live for the greater good. We live in mobs. We live together in groups. That's a great thing, because relationships sounds like, for you, one of the things that have strengthened you along your journey. And it's the same for me, and I'm sure it's the same for many people, most of us, if not all. But personal branding is kind of a thing that sits uncomfortably, because the flip side of collectivity is sometimes we're crabs in a bucket, and if you jump out and do your own thing, you'll get mocked and you'll get torn down. Why don't you call it something else to kind of hide? Like, even for Avale, my website, my mentor's been telling me, bro, you got to personally brand andrewfatavale.com. I'm like, man,
yeah,
that's uncomfortable. For the past 3 years, and the furthest I've got is fatavale.com, but Wayne Henry Mortgages, what was up with that?
I was pretty simple, man. I mean, I wanted to try and come up with a branding that felt like an organization, but, you know, I sent out an email or a text to my family saying, hey, if anyone comes up with a name brand, a name of a business, I'll pay you, blah, blah, blah. And everyone came back and said, man, you're the brand. It's you. It's Wayne Henry. That's who people, and that's what happened. When I left the bank, I didn't take any of my clients. By then, LinkedIn was in full effect, and the Google was around. People just chucked in Wayne Henry. Man, my clients found me, man. They found me straight away. So it really was an easy process of elimination. It was Wayne Henry Mortgages. You are the brand. And it never felt uncomfortable for me at all, but I know how the Pacific culture works. And I know that would be hard for a lot of people, man, for sure. But, yeah, back to the game, man. Back yourself. Be proud of your brand.
That's a cool
story. Be proud of your name.
Because the customers and the clients that you serviced way back in the day are your returning and recurring customers. And it just kind of speaks to the fact that if you give good service up front, you've got a customer, and a lifetime value of a customer just increases and continues.
Yeah, yeah. But you have your low periods as well, man. I mean, I think last year, I had my best year last year, but still half of that year, man, I was only running at 60%. So in my mind, it wasn't until we did our annual, me and my wife locked ourselves away in a hotel room for 2 days, and we just sat and we business planned, we set goals, and we had a meeting, and I encouraged that if you're looking to get into business now, plan, man. Planning is the key. And there were tears, there were laughter, everything was within that 48 hours, man. And we walked out of that meeting at different people. Like I had a repurpose. And so the next 6 months, man, we killed it. We both knew our roles. We knew where we were. We knew what we needed to do. We each had a list of things to do. There was an awesome level of cohesion. Not many people can work with their loved ones or work with their wives, but I'm just very lucky, man. I'm really lucky.
Yeah, what a blessing. It sounds like you achieved a lot of your goals. Were there any goals that you didn't achieve?
Yeah, man. Man, I'm just lucky to be alive, man. You know, I just, it's a blessing every day, man, that, you know, that you get up and you can enjoy, you can go into your cupboard and you can grab some food. You got fresh running water. Man, even going to the gas station and pushing the full button, you know, that's, for a lot of families, they've never done it. Can you imagine that? There's a lot of families out there that have never gone to the gas station and pushed the FIRL button. So, you know, there's not a hell of a lot that I regret. I regret not being more determined when I first started. I kind of just flaked a bit. But no, I have no regrets, man. No regrets.
So what's the goals for Wayne Henry Mortgages from here on in, man? Are they audacious? Yep. So, you know, what's your 10-year, 5-year plan? And how do you plan that kind of stuff? How do people with businesses plan that kind of stuff? Do you have a mentor as well?
Yes, I have a couple of mentors, but again, and I can't stress this enough, you've got to keep those communication lines open. You definitely need a mentor. And my mentors are through different forms. It's through many people. It's been able to pick the phone up. You know, my dream or my goal would be able to pick the phone up and talk to my relatives, talk to my cousins about their business. Hey, bro, how's your business going, man? You know, that's what we miss. That's what I miss. It's really lonely being in this position, especially in my family. No disrespect again to anyone in my family. There's not a hell of a lot of us that are business owners. So, man, I would love to be able to have that conversation with them, catch up at a barbecue and talk about business. How's your business going? How many staff members have you taken on? What are you doing? And I don't think enough of those conversations are had, especially where I came from. That's the norm for the upper tier, you know, economic society. That's all they talk about. So I think we need to get better and more accustomed to having those business conversations, even if you're not in business, you know, even if you're working for someone. What are you doing? I mean, how are you going to get to the next position? Well, where do you go from here? What are your goals? People are lacking goals, motivation, inspiration. That's why I wanted to do this podcast.
I kind of see a lot of Cook Islanders in the Cooks, because tourism is thriving over there and that's the industry, they've gone entrepreneurial over there. Do you visit the Cooks much and do you draw much inspiration from back home?
Mate, not every Pacific Island family, man, you go there when someone dies, unfortunately, or there's a wedding. So I don't get there much. I know I do have some family over there that are really very business-minded and run successful businesses. But the majority of my family left here, and mainly in Australia, actually. I don't think there's too many people in business, but I can definitely see that there's definitely a change in the wind for sure.
There was a Henry in Parliament. Was he the Prime Minister?
No, we're definitely not that side of the family. It was I think there's two big Henry families. We're the other one.
The next Prime Minister. No, sweet. So I just got some closing questions. I really appreciate that, man. And I appreciate your honesty and your transparency around your journey, because it wasn't smooth, right? And people sometimes take people at the point in time that they see them and they'll see Wayne Henry Mortgages and you driving around. I did actually want to ask you too. There was a period there where you had a Beamer. Was it a top of the line Beamer? And I remember you saying, man, that was guzzling gas. What's lifestyle like for someone who's making money that, you know, other people?
That was stupid. Yeah, that's the stupidest thing I ever did. I just sometimes get caught up in the moment. Everyone in my office had one of those cars. You know, we were doing pretty well. It took me ages to get that signed off by the missus. Like, I had a PowerPoint presentation and everything, man, to get that signed off. But you have to go. You have to go through those moments. But again, it's just it's re-educating yourself. And was that the right choice? No, absolutely not. But I got to enjoy it for a very brief period of time, and I got to understand it. And I was man enough to admit, hey, this ain't me. Man, I need to give this back. This is above my level.
What was it? And did it have leather seats, eh? I'm not sure if I did ride
oh,
in
man,
it.
It was a beast, man. It was like a 6.2 liter V8 Mercedes. Oh, it was ridiculous. And for those of the viewers, man, I live 30 kilometers out of town. So the gas was about $1,500
a month. $1,500
a month. It was terrible. Don't buy expensive cars, peeps. Your car's fine. It will get you to A. It will get you from A to B.
So yeah, the Camry is probably the right mix.
Yeah, I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from that purchase. Yeah. So again, just life giving you a little bit of a kick in the butt.
All right. So we'll wind it down with this. It seems like you're more settled now. You're more comfortable with where you're at in life. You started off talking about physical and mental well-being. It sounds like you've downgraded your life. You got a little bit, you got a little bit flash for a little while, and it's just a part of your life that you had to go through in order to know that that's not what you wanted. Where are you at now, and why are you in this level of comfort?
Man, I'm just content. I'm very privileged, just happy with my surroundings. Again, just off the back of that car, you know, we had the big house, man. I just never felt comfortable in that house. It was too big, so we sold it, and we bought a little townhouse on the same street.
You still got the beach?
We had the batch. Yeah, we sold that last year. Thankfully, we sold that last year. Again, that was a nicety and a really cool thing. Mangawai is a beautiful place, but we were never there, man. We were working too hard. So again, just wrong purchase at the right purchase at the wrong time. Mm. You know, another 5-10 years down the track, where I'm probably a little bit more comfortable financially, that's probably something we would have done. But yeah, every morning you get up, man, it's a blessing, and every morning, you know, that you your name's, you know, on the outside of that building, or you're ready to do or to start your day. I can't explain it. I tell business people, I told JT this when he was umming and ahhing about, you know, starting Carver Bowl. I said, bro, I can't explain to you the feeling, but all I can say to you is it's different and you're really going to enjoy it. And I can't remember when I caught up with him, but I think when he finally went out, I rung him and I said, so you got that feeling, bro? He goes, yeah, I know it. Now I know what you're talking about, bro. I got that feeling. So it's a feeling, and you'll probably have guys or guests or, you know, people on your podcast that probably understand that feeling. And it's different, but it's good.
That's awesome, bro. And I see so many parallels between yourself and Johnny. And for me, I'm just buzzing out because we've hung out since we were 13. And now we're like 40. And here we are doing these kind of geeky little things with a camera and a microphone. But really, we're just mucking around talking about dudes, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, and surrounding yourself with good people that are going to, help or benefit you as an individual is key too, man. So any other listeners out there, man, just surround yourself with people that are going to help you, not people that are going to bring you down. When you're in the business, you're going to need people in your life, man. You can't do this by yourself. So there's a good saying, one of my mates, I can't remember this. I can't remember this. It's like, if you surround yourself with turkeys, you can't soar like an eagle or something like that. I can't remember what the saying is. But just surround yourself with good people and people you can have honest, open, transparent conversations with. Mm. Like yourself, bro.
Yeah, likewise. All right, so just some questions to finish off. If you could chat with anyone dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, Tupac Shakur, man, for sure. There's not very many people, man, on earth that influence my life. And this doesn't mean I'm out there gang member trying to shoot people or get shot. Just his poetry. I got a lot of his stuff, man. You know, what he did in 25 years on this planet is incredible. So that's, I'd just love to sit down and have a chat to him and pick his brain.
What's your favorite Tupac song?
Probably Brenda's Got a Baby. It's deep, man. It's a deep, it's just, doesn't have any bars in it, but it's just deep. There's really no chorus. And I think he wrote that from memory, man, as a 16, 17-year-old. So the intellect from an early age was incredible. Dear Mama's a pretty transparent song. You know, one of the only, I could talk about this for hours, man. But, you know, he's one of the very few hip-hop or musicians that were able to pull you in.
Right. Any last words of wisdom on your journey that people can take away as a tool or to equip them for their own success? Mine as well.
Yeah, man, just don't rush. It's a long game. It's not a short game. I know everyone wants to be millionaires and billionaires, and don't get in the business for the money. Get in the business for the betterment of yourself individually and your family, and just figure out what makes you happy, man. What actually makes you happy? If money makes you happy, that's all good. That's the starting point. But just, yeah, if you're going to get into business for the right reasons. And just because people have done or worked in those industries and families have worked in industries a whole life, it doesn't mean that you can't start your own business. And you certainly don't have to be intelligent by any means. You've just got to have a good sense of life and just know who you are as a person, man, is key. And you can do it. It can be done, man. If me and JT can do it, everyone can do it. Sorry, JT.
Nah, sweet, man. I appreciate your time, Waino. Thank you so much. We've been mates for such a long time. It is definitely a little bit weird to be doing these kinds of things with a camera and a mic. Because we just have these conversations all the time. Appreciate that I'm able to just ring you up and you ring me up whenever we need. And also, you know, this is something that people didn't know about you, but I've been on the road traveling for a long time since I was about 19. But when we were at school, we used to pick you up and take you to your rugby games and then go to my own rugby games. And when I was away, you always used to drop in just to say hi to my mum and dad. Mm. At their house, even when I wasn't there. And I think, you know, that's touching for me because you just used to go and check up on my parents. But it's also touching and shows why you've been successful is that because you really value and treasure relationships and you also don't forget those relationships from a long time. And I think that, you know, that's a massive part of the success story that maybe we didn't touch on, but I couldn't let a formal interview like this go by. When those things are those things that you do without people looking. I used to just come back from wherever I was overseas and their mum would say, oh, Henry came over. you know, and I'm like, oh, cool. He just came over to visit.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. And same as dad, he would say, oh, Henry came over. And so, yeah, man, I appreciate you checking on my parents and going and visit, going to visit them. And, yeah, that, I think that's beauty and I think that's an integral part of why you're successful.
Yeah, man. Hey, just appreciate having the opportunity, man. And yeah, there's some really cool stuff happening in the whole poly movement. There's some really cool stuff. And I'm just, the people on here have inspired me. Damon, man, that was, you know, that I really enjoyed listening to him. Someone probably opposite scale of me, like super intelligent guy, but had said it in layman's. I really, really enjoyed it and really understood it. So keep these up, man. And to anyone out there that needs to contact me or wants to have a chat or are looking to get into business, or wants to discuss anything, pitfalls or what they could likely experience, man, just, yeah, I'm sure my details will be there.
Yeah, so I'll get them on the show notes, but quickly, you're on LinkedIn, is Wayne Henry Mortgages on Facebook or what's your
social? Facebook, LinkedIn, with our website's actually just about finished, so hopefully by the time this airs, we'll have our website completed as well. I just had to get that upgraded. So everything's Wayne Henry, man.
Cool, that's the podcast for today. I hope you've enjoyed it. Obviously, I've known Wayne for a long time, and to be honest, I've really, really liked how he's been able to stay lighthearted and crack jokes all the way throughout his life. Whether as a businessman or on the factory floor, Wayne has always enjoyed a good laugh while not compromising the fire he had inside of him to achieve higher things. Also, just from a personal perspective, I also really enjoyed how his success, like Apollo's last week, has really been a joint effort with his wife, Karen. It can't be understated how important your life partner is, and so credit to the husbands or wives and wider families of the people I interview. As collective people, you know, our success is truly a result of many hands and many people. So that's it for this week. Before I go, don't forget to seek me out on Instagram, on Twitter. Those are both under my own name at the moment. And then search Facebook for the Global Pacifica Success Podcast group and join me there. Let's stay connected. We'll see you in there. I'll surprise you with the next guest, so look out on my social pages for who that'll be. I can't tell you who it is, but I can tell you that it'll be a cracker. All right, have a good week. Thank you so much for listening. God bless and take care. Mai taki mātou.